Thank you very much, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this December 23rd, Christmas just around the corner. And right here on the block is Terry Savage from terrysavage.com. You can read her in the Huffington Post as well. Terry, welcome to the program.
Good to be back with you as we wind up the year. Days are getting shorter.
I want to jump right into it, too. Brett Ahrens wrote a piece in MarketWatch today, and Brett's been on the show a few times and has a certain way of looking at the world sometimes, but he looked at the top 10 stock picks from Wall Street analysts last year. Actually, I guess Thomson Reuters and Factsheet looked at it. The top 10 stocks that analysts rated most highly last January have lost collectively 7% so far this year. The 10 stocks that those analysts rated worst last January have gained 3% so far this year. What does that tell you?
Well, you know, I have great respect for Wall Street stock analysts, but you know I've consistently said you don't need to beat the market. All you have to do is be the market. Buy a low-cost index fund. Keep contributing. Don't get scared out when the market goes down. Don't get euphoric when it goes up. And over the long run, you'll come out ahead. And that proves my point. In fact, it's been an interesting year for the stock market. I was just putting together a kind of a year-end commentary. And when you look at the Dow Jones, today we're at 17,544, up 127 points. So I was looking at the range for the year. The low was made back in late August. Remember, China devalued its currency, and there were fears of a global slowdown. Today, 17.5. Back then, 15,370 in August was the low. The high, around Memorial Day, everybody was thinking, what a great year. The Dow hit 18,351. So we've had about a 3,000-point range for the year. And we are now about 800 points below the highs, so down a little over 10% from the highs. But we're looking like we might wind up the year just about even. And so we'll see.
I'm reading about the S&P, how it's really not moved very much in the past 14 months. I mean, there's not been much range at all. Is there anything that we need to know about that or just sort of deal with it, or is it a sign of things to come?
Well, whether you're talking about the S&P or the Dow, which most of our listeners probably follow more closely, but everybody could probably give you, listening here anyway, could give you a rough range of where the Dow is. Most people don't track the S&P. What we've seen is that we've had slow economic growth, no great ups, no great downs. We just looked in yesterday, got the 2% GDP. It's not a boom. It's not a bust. The Fed did nothing all year. And the market did, if you look at it from beginning to end, without the highs in May and the lows in August, the market looks like it'll wind up the year. We have a few more trading days doing roughly about nothing. But don't forget, that's the Dow Jones Industrial Average prices we're giving you. You also had a dividend yield component, which, as I go back to my original comment, keep investing over the long run, that adds to the returns of your total portfolio. So it's been we had some exciting days. We had a lot to talk about over this year. but from beginning to end, it looks like it's going to be like, what was that all about?
All right, I want to talk about, you wrote in the Huffington Post today about some money apps, the best of the year. And we've talked about a few of them through the year, especially the one that has to do with college investing and all of that. But, you know, one that jumped out at me, well, I guess in general, you know, we're Cook and family. Thank God my wife does all of that. But it looks as if, reading the column, it looks as if, I don't know that Quicken's going to become a thing of the past, but you can now do just about all of that. And people do all of that on their phones.
Yes, smartphones are taking over. And I just will start with this message to people. Don't get overwhelmed by technology. It was just 15 years ago I was running around the country on a tour telling people how to pay their bills online. And now I would say that the vast majority of people pay at least some of their bills online at their bank's website. My request for you for the new year is to pick one app or one technology that you can use that will make your life better and try it. I'm not your technology expert here, but I've made it a point to keep in touch with what the latest stuff that's happening now. So, yes, Quicken is a wonderful program. It sits on your desktop if you're away. You might want to have Mint or Mint Bills, both of which I've written about. These are all posted at terrysavage.com under this new column, Best Financial Technology.
So Mint or Mint Bills. I also like Acorns. I've seen others like this, but this is an app that will take what you spend, round it up, and then save those few pennies every time you make a purchase.
Yeah, this is for 20-somethings and millennials. It's a way you sign up your bank account. And every time you make either a credit card purchase or a purchase that you use on your debit card or write a check, all that changes around. It's like the penny jar gone modern. Every time you get up to $5 in spare change, it sweeps it into an investment account that is nothing that you manage. It's their categories: conservative, moderate growth, aggressive growth. And it makes it easy. It's sort of a painless way to save.
All right,
so
I like you.
Acorns is a great app.
I like your idea. You don't have to pick them all. Go to terrysavage.com, read the column, pick one, maybe pick two, and get started that way. Terry, it was great to talk to you. And I'm off next week, so I'll talk to you after the new year. I hope you have a great holiday.
But I will be checking in next week because we want to do some year-end talking about the markets and what to do for the year ahead.
I'll be listening. You'll be talking to Elise Glink then.
Absolutely. Elise and I have a plan.
All right. Bye-bye, Terry. It's 12:23, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on December 23rd. Steve Bertrand in. Thanks very much for tuning in. I appreciate that. And thanks as well to John Kolsak, the co-owner of Kolsak Funeral Home, who joins us on a phone line now. John, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I cannot be more flabbergasted that our ability to serve our community has raised such a stir.
It's funny.
We just want to take care of our community.
And I know you've talked to producer Yun Tai a few times, and every time you do, Yun says, yeah, he doesn't know why we want to talk to him.
Right. Right. It's just amazing.
Well, I think it's an amazing sort of thing. So when I read this, that Wheeling is going to allow you to have a liquor license, and you referred to it as sort of a pioneering effort. I want to ask you what you plan to do, but when I read about it, I thought, well, you know, a lot of the wakes I've been to, if you go into the family room, there's already an informal bar set up there. I mean, it's not an altogether new thing that that there's liquor at some of these funeral homes. I would imagine what you're going to be doing is a bit different from that. So explain for me what your vision of this is.
Well, I do believe it is kind of a pioneering expedition in the sense that we are looking for the best ways to serve our families. In 1930, my grandfather started our business on the north side of Chicago to serve a need of the community, and we're not doing anything different but carry on that legacy. We've had many families that have asked for catering options to come in, and they've asked about alcohol specifically, and we've had to say no in the past. But as we all know, things happen at funeral homes, and I just want to make everyone safe, keep everyone on the correct lines, so therefore we can essentially allow people to celebrate the way they would in their own home. When we gather for the holidays, especially this time of the year, what are the things that are always there? There's family, there's friends, there's food, and there's drink. And now by our village being so wonderful to allow us this opportunity, we can now pass that on to our families in a legitimate way, in a safe way.
Right, and you say legitimate because I would assume a lot of it's happening in a lot of spots now, sort of in an illegitimate way. Are you a pioneer? Are there many funeral homes around the country with liquor licenses?
There are a few. There's one in Milwaukee. There's one in Nova Scotia. There's one in Minnesota. And out east, I believe there's one or two. But, yeah, we are the first one in Illinois, as far as I know, that have gone down this path of formalizing an agreement to give people the best way to celebrate a life.
We're talking to John Kolsak, the co-owner of the Kolsak Funeral Home in Wheeling. John, how's it going to work? I mean, is it just going to be is there going to be a bartender? Is there going to be a buffet table with a couple of bottles on it? Or
what it's going to be is we are in no way, shape, or form going to function like a bar.
Right.
That is not the spirit of this opportunity. It's going to be an enhancement to the already existing service packages that we do offer. Imagine being able to go to an event and like a country club where there's a bartender that's off to the side, not in the room where the body is or anything like that, but can offer you a nice cocktail,
right,
or a nice glass of wine in a very classy, spirited way. And we're partnering, as of right now, with Tuscany, with the Stefani Group. It's a restaurant here on Wheeling, in Wheeling on Milwaukee Avenue.
I know it
and
well.
They're going to essentially, we give them an extra space within our funeral home to operate. So Kolsak Funeral Home will not be dispensing the liquor or the food. We are giving Tuscany, as the caterer, the ability to come in and to serve our families together as a team so our families can have the best experience at a life celebration or an event that really makes sense.
John, you know who this is bad news for, right?
Who is that?
All the bar owners who locate themselves right next to funeral homes.
And you know what? We are not going to be a bar.
But you know what I'm saying. A lot of times you're at a wake or something, and the guys are going to go next door. But, you know, I hope my wake doesn't come for a while. I don't live too far from you. I'll give you the business if you need it. But I think it'd be kind of nice if my friends were standing around with a cocktail and telling stories and reliving good times.
And truly, that's our intent. We believe that funerals are like the last chapter of a well-written novel. You know, if you don't read that last chapter of the novel, you don't get the resolution. You don't get the conclusion. You can't walk away thinking, wow, I feel encouraged by this. So that's what we really want to do. We sit down with every family. We find out what their needs are, what their requirements are, where they're coming from, learn from them. So together we create events, life celebrations that really, truly reflect a life well lived. So this isn't about alcohol. This is about being able to serve families in the best way possible, like my grandfather started in 1930.
John Kolsak, co-owner of Kolsak Funeral Home in Wheeling. Listen, thanks very much. I appreciate you joining us and explaining that today.
Thank you very much, and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to
you all. Merry Christmas, John. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, did you get ready for Christmas by reading the Polar Express to your kids over and over and over? Chris Van Allsburg is the author. He joins us now on the program. Chris, welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Did you ever imagine 30 years ago that you'd be touring the country on a 30th anniversary of the book?
Well, no, I didn't. I mean, authors often you know, have expectations for the things that they work on, but I never had an idea that the book would have the popularity it's had for so many years.
Well, it seems to me that the story comes at sort of a moment when a kid's sort of wonder is threatened by reality, and maybe that's why it stayed with us so much. I mean, maybe that's what Christmas is all about anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, it is a coming-of-age story for the young boy who's the protagonist, and there is that moment when all kids have to, you know, wrestle with this belief they have in something really pretty fabulous, and their, you know, growing sort of rational mind, and they start questioning the story they've heard, the legend that they've heard, and so they feel pulled. You know, do they want to become a big boy and know what the world really is like, or they want to, you know, keep on believing in a reality that could actually include something like Santa Claus?
You say it's about faith in many ways and the power of the imagination to sort of sustain faith. Explain that for me.
I think in the absence of, hard evidence for a fact, or hard evidence for something that it's really your imagination that sort of sustains you allows you to entertain ideas that are maybe slightly mysterious or slightly inexplicable or slightly magical. Obviously, to function effectively in the world, you have to approach it with a rational mind. But it's a more, I don't know, enchanting place if you allow your imagination to entertain possibilities.
We're talking to Chris Van Allsburg, the author of The Polar Express, here on The Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand in. Chris, do kids ever ask you if it's a true story?
Well, they don't ask it directly like that. Like you know, are you pulling my leg, Mr. Van Allsburg? But they do ask, and I don't break faith with the position of the book, which is that, this is a story of my own experience when I was eight. And was suffering some doubt, but had the great good fortune of having this train pull up to my house and made it up to the North Pole on Christmas Eve.
You said in an interview that the art, the paintings in the book, were inspired by a 19th century German painter, Caspar David Friedrich, correct?
Yes.
All right, so here's my question. When an artist is influenced by another, I mean, I just wonder, Do you set out to do that? Do you say, okay, I want my paintings to look like this guy's, or are you done and then you look back and say, wow, I can sort of see the influence there?
In this case, it was definitely more the second description, which is that you're aware of having been influenced by the work you saw after you've completed it, because I wasn't consciously trying to sort of channel Caspar David Friedrich, but he was he did some very kind of odd landscapes where the light is quite peculiar in them, and I think I was attracted to that. And he also did landscapes that had very small figures in them, in these very vast spaces. And so I think the idea of making the train very small in some of these big landscapes, and also the kind of, I don't know, not particularly brilliant colored palette to create that strange quality of light I saw in Caspar David Friedrich, those were, I don't know, influences that I felt. They got buried deep inside or something, and then when I set to work myself, just sort of ended up doing it that way, and then found, when I was done, if I had to cite an influence, I could look at it and say, yeah, maybe it was this painter.
Which is probably a more genuine influence than if you set out to do it, right? If you set out to do it, it's more of an imitation maybe than an influence when it comes to art.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. If you've got it on your mind while you're doing it and it hasn't really sort of been incorporated into your, I don't know, aesthetic vision, then it is a little bit more like imitation.
You also have spoken of your own imagination and what you write, and that you've never been able to, that you're always writing just short of where your imagination is. And when I read those quotes, I think, you know, when you have a dream and you try to grasp it, and it's always just a little bit beyond your recall. It's kind of out there, but it's a little fuzzy. Tell me about this idea of never, would you agree with that still, that you've never sort of achieved your imagination in writing?
Well, I would agree with that, and I think that's a good analogy. Sometimes the attempt you can make to describe a dream, or even if you're simply reflecting on it, it seems to, you try to wrap your hands around it and it turns into vapor. And having an idea for a book, and that would include not only an idea about what the story is, but what the pictures are like, and what the feeling would be as a result of seeing those two things together. You can imagine what that will be when you're just imagining the very beginning of the thing, and you have this idea. And then as you set to work, your goal is to try to make the real thing trigger the same feelings that you had when you were only reflected on the idea. But it is sort of like trying to describe a dream or remember a dream. No matter how hard you try as an artist, you can't really make the thing real that is in your imagination. There's always a little, sort of decay in the process, right, of trying to take this idea and make it a real thing.
And sometimes the harder you try, the more difficult or the less likely success becomes.
I think you're right, yes.
All right, so it's 2015. Kids all over the world are opening their gifts, and many had probably prepared for Christmas by having the Polar Express read to them or reading to them. I just wonder, I know you just toured the country talking to kids about the book. Have children changed much in the 30 years since you first wrote this? Have you noticed any change in kids, or is it sort of an eternal thing and there's really not much difference?
That's a good question, because you think of childhood as getting, you know, shorter and shorter, and that certainly one of the effects perhaps of exposure to digital technology would be to abbreviate childhood even more greatly. But I haven't seen that. I think there may be a kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's predicted just through, I don't know, psychology, neurology. There's an age where this inability to wholeheartedly embrace this fantasy that your parents have been telling you about and that you've grown up with, there's a particular age when that becomes a challenge to continue to embrace it. And I don't see that kids are, you know, getting younger and younger when their doubts creep in. It still seems to me to be around 7 or 8, despite living in a civilization or society which, you know, seems to hasten their development.
Well, that's nice to hear.
I haven't seen it too much. They're still kids. I think it's just such a terrific story. It's such a, you know, you don't want to give it up. So, you know,
it's a terrific story that intersects with a terrific time in children's lives, in our lives. So thanks for that. Chris Van Allsburg, it was nice to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Chris Van Allsburg is the author of The Polar Express. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
So this is Christmas. And what have you done?
It is 12:53. You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Scott Kleinberg is here from the Tribune to talk about social media. And he's going to talk about Kim Kardashian's apps coming up. But first, the Beatles, right? We just heard John Lennon. They're the big news for the Beatles.
Yes.
Or maybe big news for the rest of us.
Yes. You'll soon be able to listen to the Beatles on your favorite streaming audio service. So whether it's iTunes, Spotify, or whatever.
So what's that about? Because I remember they weren't available on iTunes, and then they were.
They were. That was back in like 2010, where they didn't want to go into the digital age, and they decided to, and they were just available for download. So to be available on streaming is a big deal. It basically means, you know, the future of music is through streaming. Everybody thought it was going to be exclusive to Apple and just be one of them. It turns out it's like 13 or 14 streaming services, some that I haven't even heard of. So apparently they really want to get out there.
Is any other artists who aren't streamed?
You know, I mean, I'm sure there are some that always hold back, you know, for better profits and that type of thing. But it's been the Beatles, their label, that has been just, you know, we're anti anything to do with digital.
Right.
So streaming was something we never thought we'd see. And now the fact that not only you're going to be able to see it on like the paid services, even free services, if you use a free Spotify account, you'll be able to listen to their music, which is kind of rare.
And I do, Scott. Okay. Scott Kleinberg here from the Tribune. And those become available tomorrow, right? It's Christmas Eve.
Yes, Christmas Eve.
All right. So there was a study out, I don't know if it was earlier this week or last week, about how fewer people are using the internet at home. And when I read that, I'm like, what? How can that be? I mean, we're all about expanding the internet.
Right.
But maybe the subtitle there tells more about the story.
Yeah, it's fewer people relying on a home type of service to get their broadband. So fewer people using the cable company or using the phone company to get their service and relying more on their cell phone plans and relying more on the internet that comes through their mobile devices.
So does that mean people are giving up a laptop at home and doing everything on their phone?
That's what it would mean. Yes, it would mean fewer people are using their laptops and more people are using their phones. And as much as I have tried to do that, I find it really, really hard.
I'm glad you said that, because yeah, that just seems so uncomfortable to me.
It is.
And maybe it's an age thing. I don't know. But
no,
I like
the keyboard. It's the keyboard. Having a physical keyboard that you can type on matters.
You sound like an old man, Scott. That's what I'm
saying.
I feel
like one, yes.
But it's true. I mean, I need that at home. All right. So Kim Kardashian's apps make her tens of millions of dollars a year?
Tens of millions of dollars. Yes. It must be nice.
It must be nice.
Yes.
Tell me. And so she's coming out with a new... We always end up talking about emojis in one way or
another.
We do.
It's an app devoted to Kim Kardashian emojis. Now, keep in mind, Kim Kardashian emojis are not official emojis. You know, that's my stance. You have to have the official emoji. These are emojis that she sanctions, and her new app came out, just a brand new app related to just her emojis, and it broke Apple's App Store. Completely shut it down.
Okay, so it's an app where you can get her emojis.
Yes, correct.
And her emojis are little pictures of her?
Her emojis are little pictures of her and little pictures of her doing things.
And so many people want these that they close down. They overrun Apple's store.
Yes. Apparently, if you're like in your teens or whatever, this is a very big event.
Right. People are worried about Donald Trump. I think we should be looking into this.
Yes, we do. We need to do that.
Scott Kleinberg from the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having me.
Have a great new year. I'll see you. I'm off for a few days, so you'll probably be back around next week, I think.
Absolutely. Sure.
I'll see you the week after that.
Sounds great.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.